This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Look who's here. Tom Luganville.
Do you know what? This is a lot more fun than looking into a iPad.
Really?
A lot more fun.
It's always better in person.
I know. It's long overdue, right? Well, we got a variety of camera angles. We're here. We're there. We're up there. We're there.
Yeah, that's the upper deck shot right there. So
that's
you
right.
See Chester with the Commissioner Phillips rug
yes.
on the Roger Goodell chair. Your buddy Fuller greeted you at the door this morning.
Yeah, it's
watchdog.
It's been a little too long. I mean, he kind of forgot.
Well, he was kind of upset because you didn't stop by the local QT to get some burritos.
My three straight 4:30 a.m. wake-up calls have got me way beyond worrying about burritos. I need to get tomorrow morning. That's what I need to get to.
I know the feeling. Believe me, the way this week's going, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, man.
All right, we got a lot going on today. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, he's going to join us in hour number three. We'll get to the night in hoops and volleyball, which wasn't great. But, man, we got Lugs here, so we're going to talk a little football. Headline, though, is Peach Bowl. Kenny Pickett says thanks, but no thanks. He's going to opt out of the Peach Bowl. Kenneth Walker did the same thing yesterday with Michigan State. Tom, we saw this back about 5 or 6 years ago when guys like Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey said, hey, you know what? I've done enough. I'm going to catch you boys later. And that opened up the floodgates to what we now have. But Kenny Pickett, an incredible career. I mean, just a great, great career. But we saw the last of him at the ACC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, I, for one, just as a fan and the appreciation that I've had for what he's accomplished, and I thought the smarts and the wisdom to make the decision that he made and the people that he talked to and the reasons he made the decision is what put him in this place right now, Pac. I mean, that's what gave him the opportunity to make this choice. He doesn't do what he did last offseason. He is a maybe 5th to 7th round draft choice, okay? Instead of doing what a lot of people have done, including those who have skipped bowl games, like underclassmen who are maybe free agent acquisitions at best, saying, oh, well, I'm going to skip the bowl game. You know, I'm not going to play. This guy decides to actually come back and play an entire season. I'm going to miss seeing him play. Has such an appreciation for what he's accomplished. He did all the right things, made all the right moves. And we're at a point now where you're starting to weigh the upside versus the downside, right? Like, I had this conversation yesterday on radio with about this exact topic. And I was asked the question, could you do this? All right. And well, I'm not in Kenny Pickett's shoes. And I wouldn't have had potentially, you know, 7-8 figures on the line. But let's just assume that doesn't matter. And you've got a bowl game. And a bowl game's a reward. And you only have one time to play college football. And you only have one moment with your teammates. My answer was, I don't think I could. I don't think if it was for $0 or if it was for $5 million of an NFL signing bonus or whatever it is, I couldn't do it.
Here's what we got. We've got, and this is an age-old debate now. And like I said, it really kind of started, as far as I was concerned, with Christian McCaffrey
and Leonard Fournette. No doubt.
In 2016, when they had, you know, terrific college careers, and then all of a sudden they're playing in the Sun Bowl, for instance, not to knock the Sun Bowl.
Sure.
But they said, you know what? Hey, I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, I've given you enough film over the course of my career that you kind of know what I'm about. And whether I rush for 250 yards in a Sun Bowl or the Independence Bowl or fill-in-the-blank bowl, it's not going to really help me one way or the other. So I now need to take care of me.
Right.
And I remember back in 2016 when all that went down, man, you'd have thought the world was coming to an end.
Sure.
I mean, people had really strong views both ways. And I get it. I mean, the old school mentality is, hey, you start something, you finish it. You got your guys that you've been working with. It's the reason you lift all those weights. It's the reason why you do all the sprints.
Sure.
It's the reason why, hey, that's part of being part of a team. And whether you're 8-3 or playing for a national title or you're 0-12 or whatever, hey, you finish it, right? That's the old school mentality.
Yeah.
We now are in a totally different universe.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different universe.
Or in the me first universe.
No question. We saw it this week, maybe more so than ever before, with name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal, all wrapped into one. So I kind of understand both sides of the argument.
I get it, yeah.
And you know, if you were one of those guys like Kenny Pickett, hey, you know what? Now you got to worry about your future.
Yeah.
I totally understand why guys go, Well, for not playing from the national championship, not to demean the Peach Bowl, it's a New Year's Day 6 game. When's the last time Pitt was in one of those?
Right.
We saw it last year with North Carolina. How many guys had said, I'm going to pass on the Orange Bowl? North Carolina been to a major bowl in 70 years.
Yeah.
You know, the old school in me is like, man, you got to close the deal. But the new school is, I understand where they're going.
I do too. It's tough. And I think you have to go back to let's just say, pre-cable television and to slightly after post-advent of cable television, because that's what's created all these bowl games, right? So the more bowl games we have, the more diluted it's become and the less value we've placed on how special it is to earn a bowl berth, right?
Correct.
So we're allowing 6 and 6 teams to play in bowls. When I was coming up, you were coming up, you had to be 7 or 4 or better just to be considered. And then at that time, there weren't enough bowl games.
You had to be a top 25 team to say, man, I hope we get a bid.
No, there's no question. Right? And so for me, we have it. The process and how we've evolved has not helped the perception of how a player looks at the value of a bowl game. Because if they valued it, it would be a much tougher decision.
Right.
And they don't, and that's fine because that's how they've been brought up to view it. But it's still, I get the big bowl game to be able to do something, and Pitt has a chance to win 12 games. Haven't done that since 1976, and that to me that's a big deal. I think it's even probably a big deal to Kenny Pickett. But I see the downside. I can just imagine the people in his ear. I can imagine the conversations that he's had. And you know what? In fairness to him, he's probably really conflicted over this. Really, because he's a competitor.
Right.
He's a competitor, you know?
He proved it by coming back.
And I'll say this. I think I told you guys this. I had them in week 2 against Tennessee. And we asked Pat Narduzzi at that time, what did you think he was coming back? He goes, absolutely not. He goes, I never even talked to him about it. He said, just came into my office one day and said, Coach, I think we need to talk about this. I think I want to come back. And then they started talking about it. I started realizing, he had talked to the Mannings. He'd talked to some people, who should I be listening to in this process? Whose opinion matters? What information should I be gathering? And then Mark Whipple shared with us something that I thought was really interesting. He said, when I talked to Kenny, I said, the one thing that if you come back and you do, he goes, take a look at our road games. He goes, we're at Tennessee week 2, at Virginia Tech. All right, we get Clemson at home. There are going to be some moments against big, high-profile teams, and those NFL guys are going to put those tapes on first. And the reason why that conversation stuck with me was because on that particular day against Tennessee, in a game that looked like Pitt was just going to run away with it, then it turned into a dogfight. His moments on the road, like 90 degrees, there's close to 100,000 in there. It was loud. It was an early kick. He was flawless in critical situations. 2-minute, 4-minute, end of the half, third down. All of these areas that are so important to the evaluation process. And I could not get what Mark Whipple said out of my head, because now all of a sudden you fast forward to where we are now. And look at all of the big performances he had in big, huge moments that are now going to catapult him from being where he was to potentially being a first-round draft choice. So you do all that work to get to that point, and I can see why the decision became easy to bypass the bowl. I can see it.
So moving forward now, if you're Pitt, in some respects, you want to have him. Because sure. You look at Michigan State secondary, and you're like, man, he's going to throw for 600. And when those bowl pairings came out, I was laughing, going, oh my gosh, you couldn't have scripted or picked a better game for number one, Pat Narduzzi, seeing his old team. And again, I'm not knocking Michigan State. They're a top 10 team. They had a great year. Mel Tucker's done a brilliant job. But it's all about matchups. And I'm thinking, man, Kenny Pickett is going to watch tape of Michigan State secondary and go, really? I get to do this with Jordan Addison and all my weapons. I'm going to throw for 450, 500 in this game, and we're going to put 50 on the board, and down the road we go.
Yeah.
And now we're not going to get that, unfortunately, for college football fans. And I will say this, from a pure selfish standpoint, I wish they would all play.
Yeah, as a fan, you hate to see it.
And I think for 100% of all college football fans, you want to see the best players in games that, you know what, Michigan State Pitt's a good game, man. Double-digit winners, let's go play, right?
No doubt. Let's do it.
So, and I want to see Kenneth Walker again. We saw him here at Wake Forest before he transferred up to Michigan State and had a brilliant year. So from a selfish standpoint, I want to see these dudes one last time.
Yeah.
Right? And it stinks.
It does.
Because you got 4,000 bowl games, and these are one of the ones that you go, hey, circle it. I want to see the Peach Bowl. But the flip side is now you know he's not playing. And if you're Pat Narduzzi, well, in some respects, I don't have Whipple. He's left to go to Nebraska.
Right.
I don't have my starting quarterback. We got the ACC championship in our back pocket, which is a beautiful thing. We now got a chance to kind of get a head start on the spring moving forward. So that's the good news out of all this, I think, if you're a Pitt fan.
It's the good news if you're a Pitt fan. The bad news is even without Mark Whipple, if Kenny Pickett decides to play, you could throw the janitor on the sideline to coach the offense. It wouldn't matter.
He knows the play.
Kenny Pickett can run the offense. He can set the protections. He can do the whole nine yards. But it does change things when now you don't have Kenny Pickett and you don't have the leadership of coaching that play in, play out, series in, series out. So I think that will create a bit more of a challenge for Pitt than they'd like to have going up against a top 10 opponent.
Well, man, it's, you know, again, I saw the headline last night and I was like, yeah. So that's what we got. So no Kenny Pickett. We will be, by the way, at the Peach Bowl doing the show. Packer and Durham.
Well, then get Kenny Pickett on the set and talk to him about this.
Well, if he wants to hang with us.
That's right, he'll hang.
He's one of the few guys that does have Packer and Durham gear, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, he'll, dude, trust me, he'll hang. Man, you talk about a great kid to talk to. You talk about a guy that's going to kill the NFL interview. The guy that they're going to eat him up. Love him.
You know, the other thing, too, before we move on to other stuff, I had some folks yesterday call in when the Walker story came out. And they're like, well, why? What do you mean? Nobody ever gets hurt. I said, no, you can't say that. You can't take that approach either. I go back to, remember Jalen Smith at Notre Dame?
Sure.
He's going to be a top five pick.
Absolutely.
Right?
There's his ACL.
And goes in Notre Dame, I think it was in the Fiesta Bowl. I think it was Ohio State. Like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And he blows out his knee, and you're like, whoa. Yeah. And you're like, and here they are playing the Fiesta Bowl. And like instantly, between that and all this stuff, why are these guys even playing in this game? I mean, you know, you get the zig and the zag.
The only thing I would say about that, and you're right, and I was going to actually bring this up earlier, is your chances of getting injured playing a game are so minute, all right, and compared to not getting injured. Think about how many times a football player takes the field, all right, compared to how many times they actually take the field in a game. Think about all the spring practice, all the fall camp, every single day, all the weight room stuff. Your chance of actually getting hurt is not overly high, but we look at it differently because for that one time, as you mentioned, when it happens, and if it could become devastating, and if it could have a 7 or 8 figure impact on your future earnings, I think we all get that. That's part of that old versus new mentality. We can see both sides, and it's okay to acknowledge both sides.
That's right.
Yeah, it's okay.
Exactly right. All right, very quickly, last night, switching gears, because we're going to talk a lot of football with Luke's being in here today. The ACC, we talked about this a bunch during the week. National semis in volleyball. We had Louisville, number one overall seed.
This was supposed to go better, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was not a great night. We were hoping for an all AC. We were hoping for an all ACC national championship with number one Louisville and number three Pitt. Both lost last night. Louisville in a 5-set thriller, and then Pitt won the opening set last night and then lost the next three. So, unfortunately, no good news on the volleyball front, Tom Luganville. None. Zero.
But you know what we have? We have bowl season. We have excited coaches because they think they just signed kids that are all going to pan out 100%. So there's silver linings. Silver linings.
Okay. Well, you know what? With that said, when we come back.
Dang, Fuller.
What's up, Fuller? Did Luganville give you one of those? Did you bring a burrito and sneak it in there?
No, I actually gave him a Dorito.
Oh, is that what it was? A bag of Doritos. Fuller's are like, man, I need some water.
Yeah.
When we come back, though, we are going to talk signing day surprises. What did we learn? We're going to get into all of that with the master himself, Tom Luganville, filling in for West Durham. It's Packer and Durham on a Friday, 844-SAY-ACCN, the number. A lot to cover today. And, of course, Jeff Collins will join us in hour three. You got us right here on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Tom Luganville filling in for Wes, who's on assignment, if you haven't heard. 844-SAY-ACCN.
I got to check the weather.
It's Fargo.
Let me get right on that.
High of
you go
one.
Ahead and kick us off here.
Today's high, one.
One? Well, is there a hyphen before that one?
Well, that's
as
what
in
I told
negative?
Him. That's what I told him. I said, as long as you're on the positive side, you can live with it. That negative with a little wind, that's a problem. That's a problem.
It's two.
Well,
two.
Heat wave. Two. All right, let me get in some recruiting with you.
All right.
National Signing Day Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Today's the last day of the early signing day, 3 days.
Correct.
And then we get a February deal. Uh-huh. So let's go ACC right out of the gate. Before we go to any specific team, in general, different world, right? Name, image, likeness. You tell me what you saw, given your expertise.
I think what we're starting to see is because of not so much name, image, and likeness, but more so because of the extra year of eligibility in the transfer portal, we're seeing teams not push to finish right now. They're not taking reaches, right? They're not just wanting to collect bodies because they know they've got January coming around the corner. And then they also realize that the spring and summer is going to come along. And this is where the high school player kind of gets squeezed out, is if you decide to withhold 4 or 5 scholarships that you would normally afford to a high school prospect, and you carry that into the spring and the summer, then somebody's getting left out, right? And so this was a conference that was chock full of coaching changes, right? So you got Mike Elko at Duke. We've got Brent Pry at Virginia Tech. Of course, we've got Mario Cristobal at Miami, Tony Elliott at Virginia. There was no reason for any of those programs to go, I got to make something happen here. I got to make a big splash. No, you don't. Slow play it. Play the long game. And I think until we come up with further legislation that is direly needed to address the extra year of eligibility, to address the transfer portal, and for these coaches, because this is the problem, they don't have a hard cap number. They don't have a number. They can't go to their board and say, all right, we're going to take 21, then we're going to take 2 blue shirts, and then we're going to take 1 gray shirt. They don't have that number right now. And until they get that number back, it is a really, really the math doesn't work. That's the problem. And we're not talking about calculus, Pat. We're talking about add and subtraction. So are you familiar with initial counters?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we all know that if you are, the initial counter is any player you sign in that class counts against your 85 as an initial counter. Well, when they dumped all this on the lap of the coaches' staffs and the schools, coaches and the compliance people started asking, well, wait a minute. If a guy goes in the transfer portal and leaves and he's no longer with us, do we get his initial counter back? And initially the answer was, I don't know. Then it was followed up by no. Well, then what did the coaches do? Well, if we don't get it back, how are we supposed to sign a class? Because now we have to use 2 initial counters, one to replace that guy and then another one for the next guy. So they came up with a proposition to allow you to now basically get 7 of those initial counters back. Now, here's where I think the simple math comes in, and this thing's being completely screwed up, is why does it have to be 7? If the number is 85, if you lose 4 to the transfer portal, you get 4 back. If you lose 12 to the transfer portal, you get 12 back. As long as you're 85, all right, why does it matter? Right. So that was one of my simple math questions. And on top of this,
so why would they use that?
Because that makes sense.
Because I was going to say, not only does it make sense, it's constant.
It's right? Constant.
85
right.
is a ceiling. Boom.
That's it. That's what it is.
That's the
but
end,
they got
that's
a bigger problem that's preventing them from getting there, and that's the extra year of eligibility. Right. Because if they would afford the extra year of eligibility to the person that was in their last year of eligibility, that's a different animal. But they gave it to 5 classes. So now they're telling you, okay, you can be over 85 for 1 year. Well, you didn't just give the extra year of eligibility to 1 year. You gave it to 5 years. So how are you supposed to get down to 85, all right, whenever you don't know who's coming, who's going? Every coach in America at the end of December, or at the end of November, heading into championship week and thereafter, they're going into their own roster and they're trying to figure out, okay, you're a redshirt senior, but you're actually a redshirt junior. So are you staying? Are you going? Are you coming? How? I need to know. Because if I don't know, I can't tell Joe High School what we have.
Hence the squeeze. You know, you're going to hear an interview that I had the other day with Dabo Swinney, and that's the first question I asked him. Coach, today, can you tell me how many guys you've got on scholarship? And he's like, Pack, I can't. I mean, because it's a moving number. There, a guy could walk in here in 5 minutes and tell me I'm not coming back, or I am coming back, and it alters. So it's beyond walking a tight wire for these coaches.
One last thing on this too, as it relates to the extra year of eligibility, the one little wrinkle in that nobody really knew, they didn't make it overly public, was that if you had a player on your roster that was in their last year of eligibility, all right, you were not required to give him his extra year at your institution. All right. He still had it, but you could actually bring that player in and say, hey, I'm sorry, you got to go. There's some hard conversations to be had.
And it's going to happen.
It's already happened.
By the dozens.
Absolutely.
For everybody.
No doubt.
All right, let's go specifically to the league. Based on everybody that does this stuff for a living, which means you, North Carolina, top class in the league, based on the eyeball test here.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, for Mac Brown and the staff is – all coaches will tell you they want to avoid surprises on signing day, right? Avoid a surprise. Don't get shocked. And what North Carolina did is they came into the day on Wednesday with a secure class and left essentially exactly how it laid out, right? And I think it showed how set those kids were on not only committed to North Carolina, but intending on signing them. So they avoided the surprise bug. And then to me, I think I place so much emphasis on position strength, position value, offensive line, defensive line, you know, tall corners, a quarterback if you can find one that you think is going to make you better. But if you look at the top graded guys in North Carolina's class, top guy, offensive tackle, Zach Rice. Second top guy, defensive tackle, Travis Shaw. You run down the list, and then you start to look at the board. Okay, where are your needs? Where are you either devoid of talent? Where are you maybe light in terms of depth? And the other part of this equation is you're having to recruit to anticipating a player leaving early for the NFL draft. Well, you might look at him on paper and you say, well, he's got 4 years. Yeah, but if he has another good year, he's going to be gone next year. So now we got to recruit in anticipation of that. So everything has to be a step ahead or two steps ahead. I love their running back, George Pettway. It's just a really good, strong, well-rounded class with premium positions graded near the top.
Before we go to other teams, given the coaching changes in Virginia, right, prior to Virginia Tech, Elliott to Virginia, Mac did a brilliant job, and a lot of teams have, coming into the Commonwealth and going, man, got a bunch of big-time players, always does, right? So North Carolina made a killing in the state of Virginia.
Made a killing while the state of Virginia – with not knowing what was going to happen with Bronco Mendenhall, but obviously the uncertainty surrounding Virginia Tech, it's a great opportunity to pounce. Because we've talked about this before on this program. I know Mac Brown's talked about it publicly, but the state of North Carolina is a really good state for high school football. It's a strong state top to bottom. It's also one of the most oversaturated states of universities. And it's not what I call an allegiance state in the sense that a kid grows up and he says, I want to be a North Carolina Tar Heel football player. Or, it's not like Alabama. I'm going to go to Auburn. I'm going to go to Alabama. And you came out of the womb and that was it, right? You haven't had much of that in this state. So you got to give them a reason to stay home. But then it also allows you, because you don't have that, it allows you to go into bordering states and be just as attracted to somebody that's 100 miles away across the border as you are to the player that's within your own state. And that's what they did in Virginia this time around.
I want to talk real quickly, too, because we're going to address everybody and their brother the best way we can in the time that we have. But I've been a huge fan of what Jeff Hafley's done in a short period of time. And man alive, now he gets a chance to go eyeball to eyeball, gets a chance to walk into a person's home and sell BC. I don't know about you, Tom. I think that this is a program that is absolutely skyrocketing.
It's skyrocketing, and I think the most important part about this was they hit on a quarterback in Peter Delaportes. I think that he's got a chance, top-graded guy for us, nationally ESPN 300 player. You've got to have an answer, right, for when Phil Dracovic decides to depart. Here's the thing, too, that we've got to point out. We can point this out about Mike Norvell, certainly about Jeff Hafley, is these guys, and they've all been starting so late because of the pandemic. So they arrived, they got on campus, they're trying to figure out who their own team is, and their own team's not even in the building because they're not allowed to be there, right?
Right.
So you're trying to gather intel there. Then you can't go on the road in spring recruiting. Kids can't come on campus. You have no camp cycle when the kids can come on and actually attend your camp and you can evaluate. So you almost lost an entire cycle. So for you to even sign a 2022 class based off of the time that you came in and you rarely even had a chance to see somebody on FaceTime or on Zoom or what have you. It's pretty remarkable what he was able to pull off. And now with the 2023 class coming around the corner, you talk about getting ready to kind of take off. Well, guess what? Now you can have junior days in the month of January. You can have kids come on campus. Your coaches are going to be able to go out on the road in the spring, and the kids are going to be able to come to spring practice. It's a whole new world for them. They were handcuffed for the first, 15 months of the tenure. Now, all of a sudden, you've got all your weapons at your disposal.
And here's the other great news, I think. You get Phil Jurkovec says, hey, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Kind of the Kenny Pickett effect, if you will.
No question.
So I think that team, number one, is going to be dangerous in 22, and it just adds to the momentum that he's built with not only this signing class, but I think their fan base is kind of re-energized.
Sure.
I think they're kind of juiced up going, and guess what, boys? We're getting ready to be a factor in the ACC.
Yeah, we could be next year's Pittsburgh.
That's right.
You know, it's one of those scenarios, or could be last year's North Carolina, where the stars kind of align, the quarterback makes that decision. It's reflective of, I guess, what he sees in the future of the program, too, by deciding to stay. And listen, let's call it what it is. Winning cures all woes. You know, if you win, recruiting is going to increase. Recruiting starts to increase, you're going to win more. All right? It's just, it's a vicious cycle.
Well, I just like what he's doing. I've been impressed with his approach.
Don't you love his general disposition?
Everything about it. I like his answers to questions.
Yeah.
In terms of when there's something controversial, I like his approach on that front. I think when we went through the whole COVID issue back in 20, what his team bought into to a brand new coach that nobody basically tested positive, which was basically a poster child for how it's supposed to be done, told me that they were buying into what he was selling.
Yeah.
This class being a top 25 class, in essence, I like where they're going. I really do.
You know, the other point of this, too, and I think it's not necessarily a recruiting point, but it is to some degree, is we're in this era, especially the last decade or so, where when there is a coaching change that occurs, what's everybody looking for? The young, hot shot offensive guy. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But you also got to acknowledge that good football coaches can hire good football coaches.
Right.
And good recruiters and dynamic people, regardless of what side of the football their experience is on. So Jeff Hafley, defensive guy. Dave Doran, defensive guy. All right. Mark D'Antonio was a defensive guy. Nick Saban was a defensive guy. We're going to see what Brent Venables can do now at Oklahoma. Defensive guy. It's okay. You know, defense matters. Playing really good defense gives you a chance every single week. You play good defense and you have a quarterback, I promise you, you will win some games. And so I think the fact that they went out, got a defensive guy with a certain mentality, he can go out and hire good offensive people. There's this assumption that if you don't have an offensive head coach, that you can't be good on offense. And I think that's ridiculous.
We will address, like I said, everybody in the league and so forth and do a deep dive. There's so many interesting storylines from National Signing Day. But when we return, a conversation I had a couple days ago with Dabo Swinney, who let loose about really where we are in the state of college football, recruiting, name, image, and likeness, all of that stuff. You hear what Dabo's got to say. All that's coming up next. Packer and Durham. Tom filling in for Wes. You got us right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. A lot of football talk today. I mentioned a couple days ago on National Signing Day, I had a conversation with Dabo Swinney on a number of topics, and we got into roster management, about how crazy it is. And Tom, like I just told you, my first question to Coach was, do you know right now how many scholarships you'll have for next year?
With talking about, I still got some, I can't answer that because we got some guys that still may decide to come back. So I could give you an answer of what I think it is, but it could change tomorrow. Like BT Potter came in yesterday and said, hey, Coach, I'm coming back. So do you have a scholarship for me? And absolutely, the answer is yes. It's a challenge for all of us coaches. It's not as big an issue for us in the class of 22, but the class of 23 for Clemson, for some people, the class of 22 was a real, real problem. But we didn't have a lot of scholarship seniors. So I could kind of manage and project a little bit. But the class of 23 is a different deal for us. And so it's really almost impossible because it's hard to ask a young man to tell you what he's going to be thinking, you know, a year from now. They're not sure what they're going to be thinking next week, much less a year from now. and I'm committed to the guys here. So, you know, it's crazy, and it was going to be that way for a couple more years from a COVID standpoint until it times out. I think it'll get less and less as we go, but you still have that opportunity to take an extra year for all those guys that were a part of 20. So, you know, that part's not going to change. And then you got the transfer stuff that can affect your roster at any point up until May 1st, because that's when the portal closes, is May 1st. So, you know, I think you'll see a lot of teams affected in the spring, you know, whether it be current players or new guys coming in that, you know, decide they don't like it after all and leave in May. So it's a new world order when it comes to roster management in college football. That's for sure.
Dabo, with the changes of name, image, and likeness, the transfer portal, have you had to adapt? Man, I'm not asking you whether or not you're going to go pick up 15 guys, two guys, whatever, in the transfer portal. But in terms of the recruiting process, have you had to adapt based on just those two things? Transfer portal, name, image, and likeness.
Absolutely. Everybody's had to adapt. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, we're still going to recruit. We're fortunate. You know, we can recruit the best of the best high school kids. You know, we're very fortunate in that regard. A lot of schools can't. And as soon as they – and a lot of these schools, when they go sign a good high school kid that maybe was under-recruited, as soon as he has that great year, well, somebody's going to come take him off the roster. And so a lot of these schools aren't going to sign high school kids anymore. And that's sad. They're going to sign just nothing but transfers, because the transfers technically can't transfer again without sitting out. Well, how long is that going to last? I can tell you, not long. The next thing is why can't they? The same issues that allowed them to transfer the first time can be the same issues to transfer again. So why does that matter? I don't understand. But so I think that everyone's had to adapt for sure. And for us, you know, we're always going to recruit the great high school kid and develop our program throughout the deal. But, you know, now kids can leave and you could get gaps in your roster, you know, where all of a sudden, bam, that kid that was going to be a third year player, you know, and he's gone. And so now you're really young. So you might have to fill a gap somewhere. And so for us, we're not opposed to using the portal. If we use it, there'll be a certain standard that we're looking for. We're not, you know, most of the kids in the portal are kids that aren't playing where they are. And if they're not playing where they are, they're going to have a hard time coming to Clemson to play. So, you know, for us, we'd rather take that high school kid and develop them, and because we can get a great player, but we will have to use it for certain needs, and we'll be strategic with that as we go forward. But it's not something we're gonna major in.
And Dabo, the transfer portal really has had a trickle down effect on high school players, though, hasn't it? I mean, it's really put the squeeze on kids that who had dreamt, hey, I'm going to go play for school X, who were thinking at the age of 15 or 16 that that's going to be the universe a couple of years down the road. Now we go through a COVID, the super senior, the transfer portal, name, image, and likeness. It seems like what you just laid out, there are going to be a number of high school kids that, you know what, that opportunity is gone. See ya.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And that's sad. And then the other part of it is, you know, these high school kids are having to really, you know, some kids know what they want to do, but a lot of them that would want to stay and maybe play basketball, play baseball and stay for their spring semester, they're almost being forced to be mid-years to compete with the portal kids.
Right.
Because some of these schools will say, okay, I got a high school kid here who shows up in June, and I got this portal kid who's here in January, and the high school kid loses out. And that's definitely a factor. So, again, you'll see a lot of the schools not sign high school kids. And I think there was one in particular last year that first got on my radar, didn't sign a single high school kid, signed all transfers. Because, again, they're more invested, because at least there's some consequence for them to leave. So it's kind of a crazy world right now. But again, the intentions are good. You know, they really were. I don't think anybody had bad intentions. These are unintended consequences that, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll all figure it out here over the next couple of years. you know, because it's definitely a mess right now. And there's no college coach out there in America, if they're really honest, that would say it's not.
Dabo Swinney from a few days ago on our off-campus program on SiriusXM Channel 84. Speaking the truth.
Every last bit of it. You know, I would actually make the argument that not all of this is unintended consequences. These were consequences that could have been foreseen if anybody gave an ounce of thought to it. What did people think was going to happen with the numbers crunch if you gave everybody an extra year of eligibility like we talked about earlier? What did you think was going to happen to the high school athlete when you gave everybody a one-time free transfer? This was all foreseeable, all right? Now, all of that being said, still doesn't change the fact that you got to come up with a plan to deal with it. And you know, at the end of the day, and people don't want to say it because it makes you sound like you're anti-player, you're anti-player movement. But the reality is, why are guys in the transfer portal pack?
They want to play.
Okay. And if they're not playing, what are they generally? Disgruntled, right? So now they're not playing, probably not overly healthy for the team that they're at. So now you go into the transfer portal and there are way too many people in the transfer portal because there aren't enough scholarships. And if there were, everybody would have a landing spot. The transfer portal is a quarterback portal and a portal for, let's just say, a top level edge rusher, offensive tackle, a 6'1 corner. Preferably somebody that's played some. Maybe they've got at least two, hopefully 3 years of eligibility left. Okay, that's what you're looking for. The rest of those guys, they got nowhere to go, man. And the kids are listening to all of the wrong people and all of the wrong voices. And we've created a path of least resistance that, in my opinion, has created a generation in the last 2 to 3 years of a bunch of non-competitors. Because it used to be you had to go in there and earn it. Nothing was guaranteed to you. You had to fight and you had to battle. And you know what? You might not play as a freshman. You might not play as a redshirt freshman. Now, if a kid thinks he's not going to play, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. Well, you jump in that portal. Let's just say you have a spot somewhere else, Pac. You think they're going to give it to you for free? You think you're going to have, I'm not playing here, but if I go there, I'll just play there. Well, are you willing to work for it? Are you willing to earn it? Those are all, I think, very fair and viable questions. And let's not forget, too, you have a select group of programs, Clemson being one of them, a Georgia, an Alabama, probably an Ohio State right now, the premier rosters that are college football playoff contenders. And what is the transfer portal for? It's to improve your roster. It's to make you better. Maybe fix the depth issue or make you talented at another position. Well, when you have more talent than everybody else, and everybody's giving Dabo Swinney grief about not using the transfer portal, how many players are in the transfer portal that are better than what they're playing with?
Very few.
Very few. So there's no interest in him to do that. And like he said on that, he's not saying he's opposed to it, but they would have some very stringent standards and critical factors that they feel like they would have to adhere to consider bringing in somebody that they maybe had a long-standing relationship in recruiting prior to knowing exactly what they were getting. I'll give you a prime example. Henry To'o at Alabama. That guy came to, it was Tennessee and Alabama. They had recruited him for 3 years. They knew everything you could know about him. All right. So now you look at him and you say, number one, does he improve us? All right. Number two, has he been productive? He had 148 tackles in 2 years at Tennessee. All right. No brainer. Okay. That's a transfer portal opportunity that made you better with a productive player that you knew everything about. If you don't have those boxes checked, how are you supposed to get better if you already have a talented roster?
Okay.
You know, and
especially when culture matters.
Culture matters big time. And you have to start asking questions. Why is this guy leaving? Why is he not there? Why
does he... I don't want a cancer in my locker room that I brought in that, quite frankly, I didn't ask for this aggravation.
It's exactly right. And you know what? There are guys like Mel Tucker's a prime example. They'll be playing in the Peach Bowl. Had, I think, 12 transfer portal guys. And I think almost to a man, they all panned out in some way, shape, or form and made their roster better.
Beyond unusual.
Beyond unusual. But I had Michigan State this year, asked Coach Tucker about it, and he said, the homework we had to do on those guys was equal to, if not greater than, the homework we're doing on the 16, 17-year-old kid for the exact reason you mentioned. We can't bring in locker room killers. We can't bring in locker room lawyers, right? And we got to make sure it's a fit. So listen, it's just on a numbers standpoint, it's a challenge for everybody. We just heard Dabo talk about, well, you know, for us, we kind of knew, you know, where we were more with the 22 class, but for us personally, the 23 class could be problematic. Well, everybody's dealing with it, and you're going to deal with it at least probably through the next three cycles, because remember, we're only 1 year into the extra year of eligibility.
And that's why he said it's going to be a couple years down the road.
Yeah. So, and everybody's going to be dealing with this, and there's, listen, there's always going to be unhappy players. Not everybody can play. That's part of the deal.
Real quickly before we go to break, Clemson's class was small, but they kind of knew that going into it.
Yeah, they knew that going into it. I think Clemson was able to get over some of their disappointment and their surprises early on during the season when they had some of those decommitments. Keon Sab had been committed to him. He ends up signing with Michigan. Jihad Campbell, the linebacker, had been committed, ends up signing with Alabama. But they were able to get past that. And I think the fact that they recovered down the back half of the stretch on the field, I think that it sent a signal. Because it's very easy to look at Clemson with the sustained success that they've had, and if there's a blip, all of a sudden the sky's falling, right? Oh, this thing's over, Clemson. What are they going to do? Now all the negativity starts swirling around, right? Sometimes that can be hard to combat. That what they did to combat it was win, get it turned around.
What a unique concept.
It's amazing how that kind of cures all woes. And so to me, I think that everybody's premature when it's a Clemson, whether it's Alabama, whether it's Ohio State, everybody's premature with their sky is falling mentality. And you know what? We've been conditioned to thinking it's easy because of what we've seen for the last 13 years, right?
You know, the
it's
other anything thing, but. You know, the other thing, too, is there are certain people in the media that love to throw the hot take and let me throw something up against the wall and then never held accountable for it when it turns out that they were dead wrong. That happens, right. Every day.
Every day. And now with the internet and social media and everybody has an opinion they don't have to be accountable for, right? They don't have to own it. And it just creates this mass negativity that you got to overcome.
All right, quick break. We're going to go through some more teams, including Florida State. That might have been as crazy and wild a day as any team in the country. We'll talk about what Mike Norvell and the boys did or didn't do. Again, crazy storylines in Tallahassee. We'll discuss it when we return. Packer in Durham. Tom Luganville filling in for Wes. Guys, right here on ACC Network.
The Packer in Durham podcast. This is the Packer in Durham podcast.
We've got yourself a college basketball triple header on Saturday afternoon right here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. Started 2 Eastern, Virginia, Fairleigh Dickinson, then Duke, number 2 Duke, taking on Loyola of Maryland at Cameron Indoor. Then we cap today with Buddy Boeheim and the boys at Syracuse taking on Lehigh at the Dome. That is an afternoon of basketball for you right here on ACC Network. Tom Luganville will be dialed in watching every single game. Maybe not. All right, let me get to Florida State. What a crazy, crazy day. Wednesday, if you're Mike Norvell. You know, a lot of folks only want to talk about, man, how that guy get flipped to Jackson State. But at the end of the day, top 20 class, right? They did help themselves.
They helped themselves. And the problem was, is they helped themselves with two signees that came between like 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern. After all of the storyline and the hoopla and the shock and awe of the Travis Hunter flip and signing to Jackson State, it clouded the fact that the sky didn't fall. They actually rebounded a little bit and finished strong, did some nice things. And I mean, this is a class they're sitting there. They got our number 2 athlete overall in the class, number 3 quarterback overall in the class, number 7 safety overall in the class. This is a really, really deep roster. You've got 17 guys, 10 of them are 4 stars. So there's a core nucleus here that is a good foundational piece to what they're trying to do for the future, but it gets obviously overshadowed by what took place with Travis Hunter.
And what took place with that, Tom? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. That's got to go down as one of the all-timers, if not the number one surprise flip in recruiting history, isn't it?
It's without question. Now, there are variables at play right now that never used to be in play before. And I've given a lot of thought to this because obviously I've had to do countless discussions on this over the last 72 hours. And not so much that my opinion on it has changed, but if you even mention the use of NIL with this signing, the vitriol that comes with that, right, everybody wants to think that your normal recruiting pitch from Jackson State to get a five-star kid to leave a Power 5 school is going to make that happen. Okay? I contend this. I think it's okay to say, you know what? Deion Sanders, the coaching staff at Jackson State, the job they did on the field, 11-1 regular season, won the SWAC. They did a really good job. They packed their stadium to unprecedented FCS levels. They did a good job. It's okay to say that and at the same time acknowledge that NIL knows no bias. If you are naive enough to think that at some point or another, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's when he steps on campus or what have you, that there's not NIL involved in this, give me a break. Now, you can choose to believe that there's not. That's fine. I happen to believe that there is. When will it manifest itself? I don't know. But the reality of the situation is, if somebody wants to put forth the effort and do it, then if it's at the FCS level, the HBCU level, the Group of Five level, what we just saw happen on Wednesday is that the landscape is changing. Nobody's immune from it. Good for Jackson State, disappointing for Florida State. But if you're Mike Norvell and you are the Florida State admin and the coaching staff, and you have your recruiting tools and all the, you're going back to the drawing board right now and you're going, what do we need to start doing that we did not see coming? How does this happen with us not being able to combat this, with us not being able to have an answer? And I'm not necessarily saying they failed in this regard. I think they came up against a buzzsaw that came out of nowhere that happened to strike them. And trust me, it will strike somebody else at some point too. This will probably happen. Now, is this going to be routine? Is this sustainable? Is this going to be each and every year? Now we're going to have South Carolina State beat Georgia on a kid, and then we're going to have, you know, Eastern Kentucky University is going to go and beat Alabama on a kid. No. But it's so shocking that it happened the way it happened that it's created this earth-shattering moment.
Well, two things. Number one, I don't care if name, image, and likeness was used or not.
I don't either.
If somebody gets paid, good for it. I mean, it's all above board now. I mean, if there is money involved, awesome. If there wasn't, I don't care. Yeah. Kid makes a decision. That's what makes him happy. He wants to go to Jackson State, more power to you. I think what also stirred the pot here was that it was Deion to Florida State, right? I mean, that was, sure. Hey, you're talking about one of the all-time great Florida State football players making a move to take a great player away mm-hmm. from Florida State. I think what got lost, though, was that Knowles had a good class.
They did have a good
class. And nobody is really talking about that as opposed to, man, can you believe Florida State lost this guy? Yeah, okay, great. You know, we saw flips all day long on Wednesday. I mean, it's just part of the nature of the thing. I mean, Mike Locksley's made it a part of his deal on signing day that he's going to flip four or five guys mm-hmm. to University of Maryland. Texas did it. Michigan did it. Yeah. Happens all over the place. But the fact it was Deion to Florida State, I think, added a little more pizzazz. But at the end of the day, Florida State got good players, man.
I
like what Mike Norvell's doing in Tallahassee.
I totally agree. And on top of that, what we've also got to acknowledge is the chances of these kids panning out is actually very, very slim. When you look at the total number of every class, there are close to 2,800 kids that will sign an FBS letter of intent. All right, that's 130 schools, all right? And you're looking at all of these numbers and you're saying, okay, they're not all going to be stars. They're not all going to, especially at the quarterback position. And so I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but who's to say that Travis Hunter versus Shamar Stewart, who's to say none of them pan out?
Happens.
In 5 years, we're looking back and we're going, this was this big, huge storyline and the guy didn't even play. I'm not saying that's going to happen. It happens every year, not with one kid, not with 20 kids, with 30, 40 kids.
We did that exercise on this show this week and said it. In fact, Wes and I, neither one, as you well know, we're not the greatest recruiting guys. But we look back at 2017, 18, 19, and 20 of guys that were two stars and three stars, and where are they today?
Mm-hmm.
All ACC performers, all American. It happens, man.
Yes.
Again, you can go through the rankings and say, man, this is great, this is awesome, we're going to win this. Tremendous. Let me know in 2 years if they're still on the roster. Are they competing? Can they actually help your football team? You never know.
You never know. And listen, class rankings are fun. They're great for the fans. Fans eat it up. They want to have an idea of where they are. And really, the only real verifiable data that we've come up with when we've kind of studied it was we took all of the national champions since the inclusion of the college football playoff, every one of them. And the common denominator amongst all of them was that in the 4-year recruiting cycle leading to their national championship, they all had a class that averaged in the top 10, all of them. So now you're talking about the kind of personnel that could win you a national championship.
Because you have depth.
From team 11 to 75.
Catch you later.
That's the bulk of the players that are actually playing college football. The bulk of the players playing college football are 2 and 3 stars. They're not 4 and 5 stars.
Yeah.
You know, and players develop at different rates. Look at Wake Forest.
Well, I had some fun yesterday. I know we got to go to break, but like University of Georgia has done a great job recruiting. I know this is the ACC network, but let me just make a point. Georgia has signed 28 5-star players in the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
28. To my knowledge, they've never won a national title. They've been to now 2 college football playoffs. They've won 1 conference championship. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have dudes, but you better develop dudes.
You better develop dudes, too. Right.
Doesn't matter if it's a 2-star, right. 5-star, whatever the case may be.
And you want to know the difference between them and everybody else when it comes to that? Quarterback.
Quarterback. Position. All right, we got to take a quick break. Hour one, done. Hour two, the new coaches in the ACC. How did they do this week on National Signing Day? We'll break all that down with Tom Luganville. He's filling in for West Durham. It's Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.